On Wednesday afternoon in Charlottesville, Virginia, a handful of onlookers cheered as city workers covered statues of Confederate General Robert E. Lee and Stonewall Jackson in black shrouds, a week and a half after protests shook the city and continue to reverberate across the country. The uproar has forced communities from Austin, Texas to Baltimore, Maryland to consider who and what is memorialized in their public spaces, and over 20 statues have since been removed. One statue under consideration for removal is on the campus of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, where 800 people gathered to protest this week. It's also home to historian Fitz Brundage, the history department chair at UNC and the author of The Southern Past, A Clash of Race and Memory. Brundage has studied how Civil War statues came to be and their political and cultural intent. He says there are four distinct periods in the creation of Confederate memorials.
The first period was the few decades after the Civil War, but those monuments that they built during the late 60s, the 1870s, 1880s, into the 1890s typically were placed in cemeteries, and they were monuments intended to commemorate literally the lives of Confederates who died in the cause. Then between 1890 and about 1930, there was the great explosion of monument building by groups that were organized to commemorate the Confederate cause in general, and including through monuments. These were organizations like the United Daughters of the Confederacy and the United Confederate Veterans, and they built the bulk of the monuments that we're currently talking about, the ones that are in prominent, conspicuous public space and that loom large on the kind of commemorative landscape of the American South and elsewhere. Then between 1930 roughly and 1970, there weren't a lot of monuments put up, but it was more often during that period of time that, for example, high schools and public schools would be named after Confederates, street names were after Confederates. Then, starting in the 1970s, but particularly accelerating in the last two decades, there have been new Confederate monuments put up. And these monuments tend to be more modest, and they're located typically on battlefields or historic sites where they're not particularly controversial because they're perceived to somehow be relevant to what that historic space is devoted to.
So who was making these statues in the earliest periods, and who was paying for them?
Well, let me first address the question of who was paying for them. A few of them were largely or partially funded with public money. For example, the monument that was toppled in Durham, North Carolina last week was a monument that was funded by taxpayers' dollars. Most monuments were funded by private groups who raised the money and then gifted or loaned the monument to whatever city government or state government they gave it to. And so they are private monuments or privately funded monuments that are then put in public space. Now, with regards to who made them, that varies over time. Some of the early monuments were produced in classic sort of Victorian funeral art form. Then when we get to the great boom period of building of monuments between 1890 and 1930, then we get to the world of truly commercialized Civil War commemoration. And so by the early 20th century, you could literally look in catalogs for the monument-making industry, and there were such catalogs, and you could say, well, this company in Chicago has a Confederate memorial I really like. And you would send them their money, and they'd put the Confederate monument on the train from Chicago, and you and whatever town in South Carolina would unload it from the train and erect it.
Well, you've counted over 1,000 of these Confederate memorials nationwide. We've all heard of Robert E. Lee and Jefferson Davis. Who are some of the other personalities who are memorialized, and who are those who are most controversial today?
As you say, there are certainly monuments to Robert E. Lee. Nathan Bedford Forrest is a favorite in certain parts of the South, especially Tennessee.
Who was a Confederate general and also a Klansman.
Absolutely right. Perhaps the most controversial of all. But most of the monuments are to common Confederate soldiers. Those are the monuments that we think of as standing in front of Confederate courthouses.
So briefly, one of those controversial monuments that we're talking about now, in fact, there was a protest just this week by students, is at your very own campus, UNC, and that's a protest over this Silent Sam Memorial. Tell us briefly how that fits into this broader history and picture nationwide.
In some ways, I think Silent Sam, the monument to University of North Carolina students who fought in the Confederacy, is a microcosm, and in some ways it's very distinctive. The ways in which it's a microcosm is it was a monument that was put up by a fundraising effort that did not involve state funds per se. It was, shall we say, a voluntary effort to fund the monument. And one of the speakers very clearly identified it as a monument that was a testament to Anglo-Saxon civilization. What's different about it is it's a monument that was not bought from a catalog. A known sculptor made it. But the one other difference is that the campaign to build it was orchestrated within the university community. So it is, in fact, a monument by the university that was in a way masquerading behind the image that it was a monument given to the university. So it speaks to the layers of power and privilege that made possible a monument like Silent Sam, even on a very unique campus like UNC Chapel Hill.
Fascinating. And you have urged that the monument be moved into a space where it can be properly interpreted. In the few moments that we have left, I would just like to get a quick take from you on hearing our president speak in the last 2 weeks about his objections to what he sees as efforts to remove Confederate history. He says that that's an insult to the history of the South and that we shouldn't be erasing our tradition and our heritage. Is he correct in saying that, or is he barking up the wrong tree?
I don't see eye to eye with him on this matter at all. I think that we are not erasing the history. We are doing what generations of our predecessors have done. We are making choices about what history we want to give a privileged place in our public space. And I would just like to think that there are, in many communities of the South, something more ennobling, something more relevant, something more in keeping with our contemporary values than monuments to the Confederacy.
Fitz Brundage is chairman of the History Department at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, and author of The Southern Past, A Clash of Race and Memory. Thank you so much for joining us.
It's been a pleasure.
To see a full interactive map of the Confederate monuments across America, head over to thetakeaway.org. On tomorrow's show, we'll look at Confederate monuments in the U.S. Capitol building in Washington.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.